Welcome to Labor Day, everyone. Hope you have the day off tomorrow and you're up late with us tonight. That's a Phil Vassar version of a song made popular by Huey Lewis. But in that version, Huey Lewis joins Phil Vassar, and it's a pretty rousing tune to get us into this Labor Day broadcast. Glad you're with us tonight. We shift gears now, but only a little bit. Lon Strickler is my next guest. He's a paranormal and spiritual researcher who writes a blog site and called Phantoms and Monsters. And I'll tell you, I in my day job as a TV guy, and then in my a part-time job as a weekend host of Coast to Coast, I get a heck of a lot of material sent my way every single day, hundreds and hundreds of emails. One thing I always make a point of reading is Phantoms and Monsters, and it's not just because it covers the weird kind of topics that we discuss on this program, but also includes a lot of other stuff, history and archaeology, folklore, things that I'm interested in, things that I think you're interested in. Lon Strickler and his team cast a very wide net. We will continue our conversation with him about the Bigfoot topic and then expand it outward from there. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM, so stick with us. We're joined now by Lon Strickler, a paranormal and spiritual researcher who's puts out something that I just told you about called Phantoms and Monsters. Lon, great to have you back on the program.
Well, thanks for having me, George.
Just as a segue from Dr. Melba Ketchum, you had your own Bigfoot encounter back in 1981. Can you tell us the story?
Yeah. You know, my interest, I had always been interested in paranormal, but you know, my interest in cryptozoology, I guess, started that day. It was May 9th, 1981, and it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was fly fishing for smallmouth bass on the south branch of the Patapsco River, which is approximately a mile downstream from Route 32 near Sykesville, and that's Sykesville, Maryland. It was a nice sunny day. That section of the river flattens out and it empties into a larger pool. And it's an area I've been to a lot. So I was on the south bank when I looked across the river and I noticed a stray dog, mixed breed dog, sniffing around the weeds and the thickets on the north bank. Now, this dog, I say, was about 40 yards from me and was weaving in and out of the brush. I wasn't worried about the dog bothering me. I just put it out of my mind and concentrated on fishing. Now, after a few minutes, I heard the dog barking and growling. You know, I figured maybe he stirred up the deer, but when I looked in the direction of the ruckus, I noticed a dark, hairy thing bobbing up and down the thicket. I stopped fishing and moved closer from what I could, you know, on the river, because I had waders on. I was moving slowly. And, you know, to get a better look, and I noticed the dog had just stopped barking all of a sudden. So not long after that, suddenly I heard a loud yelp from the dog, and this creature stood up. And the best I could tell was it was about 7 to 8 foot tall with dark matted hair. I could only see the body from the chest up because the rest of the body was obscured by the weeds and the thickets. And I stood completely still, and I could hear a series of ticking sounds as it was standing there. I later figured out it was probably this thing gnashing its teeth together. So, you know, I started to try to move a little bit more in the water, and, you know, I had waders on, so there was a whole lot I could do. So it was, you know, simply started moving too fast for me. It walked out of the thicket, and I could tell it was a male, and I could see the genitalia. But the one thing I noticed right off the bat was, though the body did have hair over it, and there was hair on the head and down the side of the head, the face looked Neanderthal. It looked like a caveman, you know, looked human. And you know, and I decided, you know, I gotta tell somebody about this. It's because it suddenly turned around and started walking up through the woods. Now, I wasn't running or anything, but it was moving at a good clip, and there's no way I could follow it being in the waders. So I got back in my car and drove back to Sykesville, which was about a mile away. And on my way back to the car, I did notice the dog. The dog had actually gotten across the river since it was shallow. And he had a little bit of blood on him that I could see, but he looked none the worse for wear, so I wasn't worried about the dog. So I got in the car with my waders on and drove to the nearest phone, which was actually like located outside of a bar right on the river as you go into Sykesville. So I called the, at that time there was no 911, so I called the operator and got a hold of the police, which was local Sykesville police. And I could tell they were chuckling. I could hear in the background. And they said, "Well, go back and have somebody meet you there." I said, "Okay." So I got back in the car, and the drive was no more than 3 or 4 minutes, just because it was only about a mile away. But when I got there, I was amazed to see a Maryland State Cruiser already there. And the state policeman stopped me, and he told me, you got to get out of here. He was already starting to put tape up.
Huh.
And as I could see, because there was kind of a rise there on the road, as I could see down there, it was there were other vehicles, but I couldn't tell what it was. So I just said, I'll go ahead and go home. I didn't live far away. So I went home. And I came back about an hour later. And when I did get back, there were a lot of cars up and down the river. So I had to actually park maybe about a quarter mile away and walk back up to the area. But they had the place all cordoned off. There were people everywhere. There were black vehicles there. The black vehicles were actually station wagons. I could hear a helicopter. I didn't see one, but I could hear it. And there were people going through the brush with dogs.
So it was like a dragnet, somebody looking for this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I asked, there was a cop standing there, another state trooper standing there. And I asked him, I said, "Well, what's going on?" He said, "Well, somebody saw a Bigfoot." And he started laughing. I said, "Well, did you find anything?" And he said, "Yeah, somebody told me they found hair samples." They didn't say anything else. So after a while, they told us we had to all leave, and I went on back home. But I did call the local TV stations here. I lived outside of Baltimore. That was actually not far from Baltimore. So they were all wanted to listen to my story then. So
did they cover it? It got airtime.
Well, I tried to get airtime.
Yeah.
But they all wanted to listen then, but the next day I went and called back to make inquiries, and they didn't want to talk about it.
Is this, was that your first brush with something weird or paranormal, or had you, I get the feeling that you've sort of had a sensitive side to this stuff and kind of been open to weird stuff your whole life?
Well, I have been. I'm intuitive. I've been like that ever since I can remember. I was born and raised in Hanover, Pennsylvania, which isn't far from Gettysburg. So I spent a lot of time on the battlefield as a kid. And I was very sensitive to, and I still am because I go up there every once in a while, but I was very sensitive to spirit energy. And there would be times when I would be on that battlefield and I could actually hear gunfire, smell the gunpowder, smell the blood, the carnage. It was a wake up, but it's actually something I've experienced all my life.
Had you had an interest in Bigfoot or Sasquatch before you had an encounter?
No, I've known about it, but I've never had an interest in it.
Did it sort of change the focus or the direction of your life, or was you were already headed in a different direction anyway?
No, that entirely changed a lot of my research. I really started getting more serious about it at that time, and I wanted to know what I saw. I thought, well, maybe it is a Bigfoot. This thing looked human, and To be honest with you, I really still don't know what I saw. I believe it was a Bigfoot, but it was definitely a hominid, and it resembled a lot, even though it had a lot more hair than a Neanderthal, was said to be a Neanderthal, but that's what the face looked like.
I know you deal with the Bigfoot community a lot. I mean, these are your readers. A lot of them are your readers, so you don't want to necessarily tick off your entire community of readers, but I don't know if you get to hear any of the first 2 hours with Melba Ketchum. She's taken a lot of shots from the Bigfoot community, and you've written about this before, that at least some of it is unfair. I mean, some of the criticisms that have popped up as a result of her work, I guess it is fair to question her and everything, but some of the stuff, that the tactics that have been used in dealing with her have been pretty mean.
Well, you know, I've known about this study for quite a while now. I actually know some of the people that had put samples in this study, and they're all serious investigators, and I believe, you know, what Melba has come up with, I really do believe is something that needs to be continued and studied. I have no qualms about her study, and quite frank, I support.
You've sort of been on the receiving end of your own battles that are similar to what Melba's gone through. I remember what it sort of caught my attention some time ago. I saw you had this article that said, "I'm not giving up," in which you responded to some criticism that had been posted. Somebody who said, "Mr. Strickler's incompetence and charlatanism make him a danger to people suffering from very real and dangerous paranormal issues," blah, blah, blah. You basically threw down the gauntlet and said, "I'm not going to take this." And I just thought it was, excuse me, odd, because you've been such a soft-spoken guy and you've been pretty careful in your approach to a variety of topics. And can you tell us what that was about and what's going on it?
Well, I really don't want to go into it specifically. It was a group I used to work with. They had their own agenda. And when I left, it was there was some bad blood. But, you know, see, the one thing is, once you assert yourself into the presence of spirit, even the paranormal world, brought yourself out into the light, you're going to be at some time or in some way attacked by those people with dark hearts and spirit. You know, it's inevitable. And for every person who enlivens the world by making the truth known, there's a little less fear and anxiety in the world. And fear and anxiety feed darkness. And as a result, some of us pay a heavy price for staying true to our research. The paranormal world is burdened with those who have lofty agendas. And because of this, these people will conduct scorched earth campaigns, even though they eventually go down in flames. And at that point, they try to drag whoever they can with them. And it's a bad scenario, but I see it occur on a regular basis. So in this instance, I've just decided to ignore the nonsense and let the chips fall where they may.
People have very powerful emotional investments in these kinds of topics. There's a level of people who are just, "Hey, I'm kind of curious about this. I'd like to know the answer to Bigfoot or UFOs or something like that." Whereas others, they invest everything in it. And I guess it becomes very personal to them when somebody disagrees with them.
Well, you know, I don't mind people disagreeing with me. And in fact, I have no problem with people submitting, a subject that I may absolutely disagree with. But, you know, I'm going to put it out there for my readers. And that's the reason why I have Phantoms of Monsters, because I want all opinions, you know, to come out into the light for people to see and to think about. That's always been my policy. But, you know, when it gets personal and, you know, when people think they can try to, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes and try to make things worse than what they really are, you know, then I just got to put my foot down. And that's what I've done in this instance.
Well, let's talk about Phantoms and Monsters. What is the mission statement for your work, and how much of a reach do you have?
Well, it's not really a mission statement. It's kind of something that I decided to do back in 2005. It was just I was told by a researcher, you know, you ought to start a blog. Well, I had never had a blog before. I had written a few, a few reports of some of the things I had encountered as an investigator. But then I started to, do this blog, and after about a year or so, I started offering as a newsletter. So since that time, it's grown fairly steady. At this point, I have approximately 25,000 daily readers, and that includes the feed, the RSS feed, the daily newsletter that comes in the email, and other sources. A lot of it is goes out to other websites as well.
Wow, that's a pretty big readership. Are you also on radio?
Yeah, we have. I was with Beyond the Edge Radio for about 4 years up until about a month ago, and my colleague Sean Porker and I have founded a new radio show, which is called Arcane Radio. And at this point, we're doing podcasts, but we're going to eventually go into live radio again.
You mentioned, and one of the things I like best about it is it's a lot like Coast to Coast in that you take stories in the same way that we take callers. People call in or they write into you with their encounters with all kinds of weirdness. I mean, you cast a pretty wide net. Do you have to engage in some self-censorship along the way to figure out, hey, this story doesn't sound true or not? I guess you have to be careful and if that is the case.
Well, I do try to check up on most things that come in. I try to contact the witness and see if I can get any further information. If they're interested in talking to me, if they're not, that's normally an indication that something's fishy. But I tell you, it's interesting that most of the stories or most of the encounter reports that I get from actual people that really do believe they saw something or witnessed something. You know, I'm not going to criticize somebody for taking a conscious effort to write down what happened to them. I'll write something, I'll go ahead and post something on the blog and post their story, and I very rarely edit it the way they send it to me. But I'm not going to leave comments about it. I want my readers to do that.
The kinds of research that you have to do, if you have to find out, for example, that they're a real person, that's their real name, I guess. I guess it would help that it's been printed somewhere else, that there's other verifiable information before you go with the story.
Yeah, I do check up on that.
And is it a full-time job?
I try to be as thorough as possible. There are a lot of stories that get retold three or four times. They're just, told a different way. And yeah, I got to be careful about that. But all in all, it's most of the reports are fairly recent reports that I can verify through other sources as well.
Has it become a full-time job or?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's just all I do. I'm actually disabled. I've been disabled since 2001, and this is what I do. I mean, I'm able to take the time to do this. I do have advertising on the blog, so it does pay a little bit. But it's just something I enjoy doing. I do enjoy being able to present this information to people. You know, I'm not out here trying to make myself into a TV or radio personality or somebody, looking for notoriety. It's not like that. I just enjoy doing the blog, and I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy entertaining people.
I'm sure you're becoming fabulously wealthy on this basis. That's meant to be a joke. Are you the go-to guy when somebody has a paranormal story in your area? The TV people or the radio people come to interview you?
Not necessarily. it still seems to be that they've got the networks and such have got their list of people. Most of these people put out a lot of books.
I'll tell you what, Lon, we'll continue that on after the break. Elvis Costello with another Labor Day song. Take us into the break. We continue our conversation with Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Here we are on Labor Day. That's the most, maybe the most famous working man song of all time. Tennessee Ernie Ford, a big hit back in 1955. And no matter how much you may not like your job, be glad you aren't doing that. We're talking with Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, a paranormal and spiritual researcher who, as I said, casts a very wide net. We're going to talk to him about his encounter with a certain phantom when we come back. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Lon, before we move on beyond Bigfoot altogether, a couple of more questions in that regard. I mentioned in our conversation with Melba Ketchum in the first half of the program how many hoaxes there are these days. People who say they've got Bigfoot's body, people who say they've killed him, they've got an old coat or a rug or something in the freezer. You must run into that a lot. Yeah, I guess you have to be pretty careful on what you end up printing or putting online.
Yeah, you know, I don't really get a lot of that. You know, most of the hoaxes and scams out there are, you know, probably getting larger than what they should. Of course, you were talking to a particular one with Melba, and that's probably the biggest one. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, you know, a lot of people put things out on YouTube, and, you know, but it's pretty easy to spot a video that's been hoaxed, I mean, for the most part.
On Bigfoot, I guess. What about UFOs? I mean, the advent of computer technology, it's become so easy to fake this stuff. Somebody puts something out just to attract views to their YouTube page, and by the time it's exposed as a hoax, it's gone around the world a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but it does happen. And I think it probably happens more as far as in UFOs and even alien extraterrestrial sightings. Yeah, it does happen, but like I said before, it's unfortunate.
What about in ghosts?
The community at all.
What about in ghost stuff?
Same thing. Maybe not as much as it used to be, but it's the same. You know, with the advent of all the paranormal TV shows. In a way, it seems to me a lot of that is kind of cut back on YouTube, but, you know, it still happens.
It's kind of a mixed blessing, the reality TV craze, the ghost hunters and Bigfoot hunters and UFO hunters, and a lot of these shows cover the same material, a lot of them scrambling to fill an hour or a half an hour, and I think they take liberties with truth to a large extent.
Well, you know, I think in the long run, it's been good to get the information out there to people that really didn't know much about cryptozoology, and I think cryptozoology has probably benefited more from it. But, you know, there's always production value, and you know, the advertisers, and they speak louder than anybody else, and you know, they've got to put something out there in a show to, you know, to keep the interest. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but, you know, in the long run, for cryptozoology, I think it's been pretty good.
You told us about your encounter with a Bigfoot-type creature. At least that's what you suspect it was. You also had an encounter with a certain kind of phantom, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce this, so I'll ask you to tell the story.
Yeah, this is an entity or cryptid, and I'm not sure what it is, quite honest with you, that I refer to as the Kanawaga Phantom. The story is, back in the early autumn 1988, I was at a local exposition near Baltimore and bumped an old friend of mine by the name of Andy. And because we had both been part of Boy Scouts in York County, Pennsylvania, when I was a kid. So I hadn't seen Andy in almost 12 years. So we just grabbed a bite to eat and caught up. And after a while, the subject of paranormal investigations came into the conversation. He had always been fascinated with ghost sightings up at Gettysburg. In fact, we had actually camped out on the battlefield when we were kids. Well, that's when we could get on there and not get caught. But we used to camp out in some evenings. So he was familiar with me and some of the research I had done. So he stated that a few of the local troops had recently been camping at the old Camp Conewaga, and that some of the boys had reported hearing crying sounds and were spooked bad enough that they left their campsites early. They had set up their campsite deeper than usual in the woods near the Conewaga Creek, and there was a fork there where both the Little Conewaga and the Conewaga met. He stated that he and another scout leader were going to check out the area the following weekend, and he wanted to know if I'd at least go up there for the day and investigate with him. So, you know, I said, sure, I'll come on up. So, you know, I met Andy and his friend John the following Friday at the campground. Andy wanted to know how long I planned to stay, and I said, you know, I'll go ahead and stay for the weekend. So we went ahead and grabbed their gear and started moving into the woods. We actually got about 500 yards away from the actual campsite into the area, some of the areas where some of these sightings had been. So I guess it was around 7 p.m. We had gotten a fire going, and all the tents were up, and we just decided to stay around the campsite for the evening. And the first night, very uneventful, though I had this sneaking suspicious feeling, this sense that something was watching us. You know, I didn't say anything, but I kept my eyes open, head clear. These woods are pretty thick, with a lot of ground cover, and they have a fair amount of wildlife in it as well. So the next morning was, you know, we woke up, it was sunny and cool, perfect day to explore the woods. We sat down to breakfast when John asked if we had heard footsteps of movement during the night. Andy said he slept straight through the night. I said I heard some movement, but assumed it was one of them, you know, going around, walking around at night, you know, maybe going to the latrine or whatever. So nothing seemed to be disturbing the campsite, so we just dismissed it. But, you know, I still had this lingering sense that we were being watched somehow. So we spent the day walking for several miles through the woods, and I wasn't picking up anything, you know, spirit-wise or anything like that. And it's, we started to think this was going to be a quiet weekend. So about 6 p.m., we got back to the camp and sat down to talk about any little thing we'd come up with, you know. So later that evening, we were sitting around the fire, actually talking about football, when suddenly a scream rang out west and upstream from our location. Now, I thought it sounded like an owl at first, but a few minutes later, it happened again, and it distinctively sounded like a child. Now, I couldn't tell how far away it was, but it lasted for several seconds and seemed to fade in and out. So we got up and walked a few yards into the woods expecting to hear the sound again. It was quiet for about an hour, and we were discussing what it could have naturally been. You know, I've heard bobcats, owls, and, you know, but none of them sounded close to that. So we agreed that it definitely did sound like the cries of a child. So we decided to stay up for the entire night. There was a full moon, much of the woods and creek were visible. So at approximately 1 a.m., I think it was, I was walking the perimeter of the camp, and I suddenly felt like something was watching me. Now, I stood still, tried to gauge what was going on. You know, I told Andy and John what I felt, and we started walking deeper into the woods towards the fork. I think we walked maybe about 50 foot, when without warning, we recognized to our right a large dark figure with bright red eyes standing in the creek. And suddenly this thing shot straight up in the air with an audible whoosh. And a few seconds later, we heard another scream that seemed to fade as if it was moving away from us. So we hurried back to the campsite and started comparing thoughts about this phantom or whatever it was. Andy was shook up, and he didn't want to talk for several minutes until I prodded him for his recollection. John was surprisingly calm and estimated it was about 6 foot. And dark in color and seemed to have something extending from its back. And I also noticed the structures on the back, commented that it reminded me of wings, but, you know, I wasn't sure. We all agreed, though, it had bright red eyes. That is something we definitely saw. This creature found jettison so fast that we didn't even get a chance to get the flashlight on it. Now, Andy wanted to spend the night in the administration building and come back and collect the gear in the morning. So he and John walked back up, but I decided I wanted to stay in camp. I wanted to see what was going on. But unfortunately, nothing significant happened. And, you know, but I had this feeling someone was watching me the whole time.
Sounds like Mothman.
Well, that's what I thought. And since that time, there have been six sightings of this that I know of. There have been six reported sightings to me of this, whatever it is. And each time this thing shoots straight up in the air. Some people have noticed the red eyes. They have noticed it flying. But it's always along the Conowaga Creek. And the Conowaga Creek extends from right there at Camp Conowaga. It's much further than that. But the sightings have been from Camp Conowaga downstream to an area about 8 to 10 miles downstream, just north of Dover, Pennsylvania. So all these sightings have been along the creek. So, after the investigation and research, I've been thinking about Mothman. That was my first thought. So actually, back in 2008, I received an email, and this was the first confirmation. It was almost 20 years after my sighting, from a guy from lived in Dick's Dam, which was maybe a mile downstream from where we were, and he stated that he heard these similar screams for many years, and that the frightful sounds continue to that day. A scout leader also emailed me approximately the same time and wanted to tell me that a few of the boys in this troop had witnessed what they described as a dragon that was 6 foot tall with wings and a tail, but looked like it had fur or feathers. He said the boys seemed serious, but thought they were showing off and dismissed their claims until he read the account in the blog. And that was the first time I put it in the blog in 2008. And that's when I started getting some sighting reports. So, like I said, those included, there's been six sightings of this, whatever it is. And I think the last one was about a year and a half ago, just north of Dover.
You said whatever it is. I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. Spiritual, extraterrestrial, interdimensional, monster, what the heck is it?
Well, I don't know what it is, but I think, like a lot of cryptids, that this may be interdimensional. Now, when I see a lot of cryptids, I think that Bigfoot itself, I think this is a, I think there are blood and flesh Bigfoot. I do think there are some populations. But I also think that there are other cryptids similar to Bigfoot that may not be terrestrial. They may be ultra-terrestrial, interdimensional, extraterrestrial. I don't know. It's just too many instances where people will see a Bigfoot-like creature, keep an eye on this thing, just disappears. It happens all the time.
The Conowaga Phantom you're talking about, is there any Native American stories about something like that in that area?
Yeah, the Susquehannock Indians had a traditional, they had several traditional creatures, but their thunderbird-like creature, which almost many Native tribes have, is kind of a bit different. And it from what I had read, and there wasn't really a whole lot out there, it seems similar to that. And the most interesting thing is that the Shawnee, who actually pushed the Susquehannock back down south, were in that area of Pennsylvania, of course, and they moved west into Ohio, into West Virginia, into the Ohio Valley. And, of course, the Ohio Valley, and specifically Point Pleasant, we get these Mothman sightings. And I do believe, personally, that the Mothman or whatever people are seeing is somehow connected to the Shawnee Indians. I really do.
You know, there's even in dealing with Bigfoot, you hear indigenous people tell stories about Bigfoot or encounters with them or a relationship with them over the years, as Melba was sharing with us, as Dave Politis was. And Westerners, European, Caucasian folks ready to dismiss that as some kind of a quaint native lore or legend. Comes pretty close to a racist sort of an approach to these things. Well, it can't be true if these superstitious people believe it.
Well, you know, I think somebody who called in when Melba was on was talking about the prairie people, the prairie ones. That is what native people, the Navajo, not the Din Navajo in northern Mexico and Arizona refer to these furry hominids. But you know, it's part of their tradition. A lot of those people don't think that it's something unusual. It's something they've seen all their lives. So I think the people that think this is all superstition, they really need to keep a more open mind about this.
You ever wonder about the Native American connection to this stuff? It's popped up in my own work, the Skinwalker Ranch things, that wherever you find these concentrations of high strangeness, weird behavior, UFOs, ghosts, poltergeist, Bigfoot, crop circles, all kinds of weirdness, cattle mutilations, all in the same place, there's a strong Native American presence. And you wonder if there's a connection there that is not immediate obvious. You must have thought about it.
I think there's a strong connection. You know, I've been, and you read some of the things I've had on the blog. I have been following with J.C. Johnson and Crypto Four Corners and their investigations, and most of their investigations are centered into the Din Navajo Reservation. And when people, you know, when witnesses, they talk to witnesses, you can sense when they talk to them, it's like something they've been around all their lives. You know, it's spiritual to them, even though it may very well be a flesh and blood being or whatever, but it's something they grew up with, and you know, they don't know that this is unusual. And I think Native people, you know, I think a lot of these cryptids, Bigfoot, even Mothman, have got a very strong connection with the indigenous people of this continent.
Just that they're more comfortable appearing to these folks, or there's a level of communication that that others of us are not open to or not able to do.
That very well may be. It very well may be.
Same thing true for Dogman. I haven't seen you write about Dogman in a while, but I know you've written about it before. I touched on that briefly with Melba. What do you make of those stories?
I think the Dogman is just another type of interdimensional type being. I really do. I mean, you know, I talk a lot with Linda Godfrey, who's very, you know, this is her bread and butter, and she's taught me a lot, and I do believe these people are seeing these creatures. But just like Bigfoot and Mothman, I think there is an interdimensional aspect to these as well.
Looking for common denominators, I mean, it's not only dog people, but there's also cat people. In fact, one of your most recent writings was about big cat sightings, and these cats seem like more than just a leopard that got out of a zoo. I mean, there's something more strange. You wrote about something called the Wampus that I'd never heard about before.
Yeah, the Wampus cat is, and that's mostly a Cherokee tradition. In the Appalachians and down into the Piedmont, they talk about this Wampus cat, which is supposed to be a female spirit.
I'll tell you what, Lon, I shouldn't have asked you that question. The music tells us it's time for us to take a break. We'll come back and pick up the story of the Wampus Cat, and I'm going to go down a laundry list of other cryptid-type stories that you've been helping to publicize, including this weird one called Slender Man. Stick around, everyone. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast.